I need a lady's opinion, 'cause I'm not a lady like a lady is.
Okay, hold on. Let me just finish this cracker.
I'm always finishing.
Hey everyone, welcome to another week of the Womansplaining Podcast. I'm Ray and I'm joined by
Melissa,
Cheryl.
And we have a guest with us today. Melissa, I'm going to let you introduce her since she's a friend of yours.
Awesome. Yeah. I've known Mara a really long time.
Yep.
She grew up, I don't know if you're from there, but
yeah, Farmington.
When I was in high school, then mm-hmm. she was around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we went to college together, mm-hmm. And her name is Mara Loeffler.
Hello.
So we're excited that you're here today.
I'm excited too. I'm excited to be with you ladies.
Loeffler's a fun word to say.
It is fun.
Also, I just like said your full name.
You do.
Do you want me to?
Let's give her. Let's give her address and her credit card and her social security number.
Okay.
Yeah,
Mara.
My social security number is.
No.
So far, you're the one of the first guests that didn't want
to be anonymous.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll post a picture of you and your address after the stalk.
My name is really fun, but a lot of the time I get mistaken for Lara, or if people say it really fast, it says Mara Loeffler. So it's like Mara Loeffler, Mara Loeffler, Marla Loeffler.
Oh, so they think it's Marla?
Marla. They think it's Marla.
Marla Effer?
Like Marla Hooch. No, I don't know.
Wait, who's Marla Hooch?
A League of Their Own, babe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I miss that movie.
I'm tugging a Nelson, ain't I, baby?
Yeah, wow. That's good. That's
yeah,
good.
It's the way she does that.
So if you couldn't tell by that amazing impression, Mara, you are a theatrical person, correct?
Yeah, so I am an actor and an educator, I think, is probably the best way to put it. I have a master's degree in acting from IU in Indiana, and then I also have worked as an adjunct professor at a couple of different colleges, and so that's what I do. Cool. I am a freelance actor, I guess is probably the best way to...
That's cool.
Yeah, and are you in a show right now?
It is cool. Yeah, I am in a show right now. Ooh, I'm going to plug it.
Plug it.
It's called Much Ado About Nothing, if you have not heard about it.
Yes.
William Shakespeare wrote it.
Shakespeare.
And
the Bard, as we affectionately call him.
The Bard, on the podcast. Yeah. And I play Beatrice.
Nice. Yes.
And so it is taking place in Layton.
It's
a remake of Much Ado, and they're setting it in Layton, Utah. It's very exciting.
You're not far off. I can't remember the name of the theater, but I will tell you where it's located, listeners. It's located by the Home Depot on Main Street in Layton. Great Harvest is down the street, and I believe they have day-old bread.
Yeah, brilliant.
So go get yourself a loaf of bread and go see Much Ado at the Layton Theater.
Mm-hmm.
One of my earliest movie memories is watching Emma Thompson be Beatrice in Much Ado.
I know.
Holy shit. And Kenneth
Every single person in that cast.
Everyone. So Keanu Reeves, Denzel Washington, Kate Beckinsale.
Which normally you can't say oh my God, remember Keanu Reeves and how good he was in this movie? But I feel like
in that
Much
movie,
Ado.
You were like, yes. Okay.
That and Bill and Ted equivalent
he has a number
performances.
Of good movies.
But do you know that Keanu Reeves is one of the coolest human beings? Just in real life.
Yeah, I gotta tell you.
I've heard.
When
He's
I
awesome.
Went to New York in college, I was in line for a play.
Shut up.
And we had split. A few of our friends went to one play.
I know this story.
And I went to another, and I was right behind Keanu Reeves.
Shut your fucking mouth!
And I was like, Keanu Reeves? Oh!
You said that to his face?
No, just in my head. And real loudly behind him, to be honest. We were being assholes. We were just like... we've been stupid. And just making fun of it. And then we met up... I mean, it was cool. He was there. Obviously, he was
famous. It was cool. It was cool.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Did he hang out with you? Did you say hi?
No, we just saw
nothing.
Him. No, nothing. I touched his coat to be dumb. The part that's
Please
not even touching his body that I just moved my finger. I
did you reach out with one finger? You were
his car?
You rimmed Keanu Reeves?
And then we met up with our friends afterwards. And they were like, we ran into a celebrity. And I was like, no way, we ran into a celebrity.
What was their celebrity?
And I forgot Tim Robbins. Okay. They were like, we sat next to Tim Robbins. I was like, you got Tim Robbins?
What? That's not
and
as
we
cool
got Keanu Reeves?
Kids these days don't even know who the fuck Tim Robbins is.
I totally guessed that name. Is that who is that?
Yeah, that's his name.
Tim Robbins was in Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that. It was too heart-wrenching. Give me another example. I have a sensitive heart.
God. He was in Zathura, A Space Adventure.
Oh. You're like listing some real D-list movies he was in.
Sorry.
Yeah,
Green Lantern.
He was in the Green Lantern?
Yeah, apparently.
Was he just a voice or was he one of the severely makeuped guys?
It said Hammond. I don't even know who that is. Anyway, yeah. No, listen, y'all, just go Google Tim Robbins. I'm not going to read you his IMDb.
Yeah.
Portfolio. He's been pretty prolific. Like, he's got a pretty good career because he's continuously working. They may not be good movies, but he keeps working. So.
Yeah.
But Keanu Reeves.
Anyway, so yeah, Keanu Reeves.
Back to Keanu Reeves. I think he is incredibly handsome.
Oh, I would fuck the bejesus out of him.
Do you see the
meme with Adam Driver and Keanu Reeves where they face swap and it's the same. It's legitimately the same face.
Well, they're saying like Keanu Reeves is like the Tinder picture and Adam Driver's who shows up. I was like, I take it.
I would take it too. Both of them.
Freaking love Adam Driver.
Oh my gosh. Wait. He's so stinking
But what if he was
handsome?
Wearing those really weird, like super high pants with no shirt from Star Wars?
All right, Kylo. Same. Let's do this.
Okay.
Grumpy, angry. I would, all the same. All the same.
Yeah.
Although I think I'd want Keanu Reeves first and foremost. My affection for him has grown as I have aged.
So has he into a distinguished older man.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think as he has aged too, because I was never like into Keanu Reeves, but then like in John Wick, I'm like, all right, okay. Yeah.
How you doing?
What's up, Keanu?
Hey, Keanu.
I see you. Girl, I see you.
Be excellent.
My
to each
phone
other.
Number is Keanu, if you're listening to this.
I understand what that means now.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if he was listening to this?
Oh, he emails
Keanu
us.
Reeves.
He emails us on the reg. He's always like, hey, ladies, so love the podcast.
And someone sent him this episode, please. Out of our 100 listeners.
I'll tweet at him.
One of them knows Keanu Reeves.
Well, I'm sure he's probably on Twitter. I'll just at him and then just see what happens. I'll let you guys know.
Just do it. And then I'm single, you're single. Let's get together.
I'm not single,
but I will get snatched by fucking Keanu.
I'm not single, but I have my husband's permission. But also, hey, we talk about you in this episode. Check it out. He's going to be like, no, do you know how many tweets I get per day? 9,000.
Yeah, probably. Maybe he's not on Twitter. I think he's one of those celebrities
he's
that's
like,
not on Twitter.
Non-tweeters.
Yeah. You guys?
He's like, I've got too much to worry about.
Yeah.
No, he's on there at Keanu Reeves with two S's and then an underscore. Did someone take his Twitter handle?
They might
is it
have.
Blue check marked?
Yeah, oh, no, it's not. That's
That's not him.
Hold up.
How dare him not follow us?
If it's
there's no blue check marked Keanu Reeves. JK, he's probably not real.
Well, and I think celebrities are doing that thing where they're getting off Twitter because it's a cesspool.
Yeah, hey, good thing I never got on it because I don't understand the internet.
I don't either. I try to be on there for the podcast, and I just feel like it's just me, like, being like, hey, everyone. Like, I'm, like, an awkward girl showing up at a party and being like, hey, and then just standing quietly in a corner for, like,
did you just
hours.
Get here? We've been here forever. Yeah.
That was my MO.
Right. And then someone notices you, and they say, oh, when did you get here? And you're like, I've been here for 3 hours. I've just been standing quietly in the corner because I don't know how to talk to people. That's what Twitter feels like.
Oh, yeah.
I feel it's funny. Like, actually, I feel that way about being on social media for a podcast. So, like, on my normal social media, I'm just like, whatever. I'm just here to, like, look at stuff. Like, I don't need to talk to anybody. But on the podcast, I'm always like, oh, who can I engage with? I need to, like, talk to people. I need to get, like, feedback from listeners. I need to interact. But no one else is doing that. So it's like, I'll be like, hey, everyone, like, send us your stories, da-da-da-da. And it's just, like, crickets for 2 days. And then I'm just, like, melt into a puddle of insecurity of like, oh, why are people liking my tweets or responding?
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, this is the problem. And it's not because – and they probably see it and go, oh, haha. But then, like, no one takes
no
time.
One actually – yeah.
I don't know. It's just, like, social
media. Social
media
is fucking weird.
It's totally weird.
I posted a picture of my cat, like, a couple weeks ago. And then I was, like, check back on it in, like, 10 minutes. And, like, no one had liked it. And I was like, that's weird. Maybe my cat is getting kind of boring. Whatever. So I, like, waited, like, an hour. And I was like, oh, yeah. Social media. So I, like, went back and nothing. And I was like, Like, it's been an hour and no one likes my fucking cat. And then I was like, wait a minute. And like, my settings were off on like Facebook where it was like only me could see it. I don't know what the fuck I would want to like do that for. And I was like, haha, I knew people would like my cat. And I like made it public and I was like, bring me the likes. Oh, gosh. I know it's insane, but I was like, people love my fucking cats.
Look, I don't care if you don't like a picture of my face, but if it's my dog, I was like, fuck you. You fuck better you. Like that picture.
You fucking like this
you
shit.
You better like it.
It's really weird because being an actor, like, so there's a shift now that's happening where casting directors and agents and stuff want you to have followings. So, like, they will take casting into consideration.
Because that's marketing for them.
Because it's marketing for them. So
that's horrifying.
It's so horrifying. But it's, like, you can't get away from it. So I actually just signed with an agency here in town called Moda. They're only 2 years old, but she immediately was like, social media is a thing now, so we want you to get 10,000 followers.
Holy 10,000? I'm, like, excited about 100.
I know, and I was like, whoa, what? What? And so they're like, we have a person who's helping us, but this is what the casting directors look at following.
Yeah.
They look at, like, how popular you are on social media. And if you're not, if you essentially don't exist on social media, there's a very slim chance you'll get even looked at. That's really crazy.
Did they give you any tips for like, oh, so here are some like really good ways to start getting a following, or like here are some things you can do, or are they just like, go get 10,000 followers, good luck?
No, they do have like a specialist that they have employed that's is giving you like the way to handle the algorithms and stuff.
Yeah.
To get a following, but you have to do a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah.
You have to go in and like follow people.
They're looking for numbers and they don't even care if they're bots.
Yeah,
exactly.
They don't care. So it's really, it's just a fascinating
thing. Because you can pay $20 and get that 10,000.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. They don't care as long as you have 10,000 followers.
So what was like the first thing they told you to do besides just like, hey, sign up for Twitter?
Well, the first thing she said, I mean, you've got to create a reels, you've got to get on set and all of that kind of stuff. And my strengths, everything that I've ever done, and that's why I got an agent in the first place, but is because I've been doing theater pretty much my entire life. And so I was like, ooh, this is a gaping hole in my skill set. So I was like, well, I better get an agent so that I can start getting more experience on film.
Yeah.
Because it's the same, essentially, the same intention. Like, if you're an actor, always you need to worry about intention, about, like, what your character wants, how they're going to go and get it. But with film, there's a different technique. You're trying to sustain a moment as opposed to
an arc.
An arc, yeah.
I can't imagine also, I mean, there's a lot of things that, as a woman, you're probably used to paying attention to in the theater world that now maybe even, I don't know, or even harsher or more like upfront with the film world. Have you found that?
Well, the thing that is a fascinating conversation is like how women are presented like on film and television and theater. There's still really not a safe place for fat bodies. You're seeing it kind of coming a little bit more into the limelight when Girls happened. And I think Lindy West just had it. She's written a book. She wrote a book called Trill. And now that they're...
I watched the first episode.
Did you like it?
I thought it was really interesting. There was a lot of stuff in there. I feel like I need to see more of it to get a sense of if I really like it.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of themes in there that I thought were really interesting. Anyway, finish your thought and then we can talk about Trill because I really
Yeah, so it's fascinating because there's like this weird feedback loop of men writing women characters and then the character description is like, she was tall and thin with big boobs and she was really beautiful but didn't know it and, you know, like all of this stuff. But that's not a character description. That's just what they look like. And so you're like, well, who is this person besides she's tall and big boobs and doesn't know she's gorgeous? You know, it's just like...
Doesn't say anything about her at all.
There's actually like... So I come from a film background, not acting. I did some acting, but then I realized pretty early that I wasn't like great at it. So I... like move more behind the camera. But I come from that background and did screenwriting classes, and I remember seeing all of those like memes and things coming through where it was like men like to write women characters and they like to say things like what you said, like she was beautiful and didn't know it, or she was effortlessly beautiful, or she was like a goddess. And they would just describe these women who were just like, who are these people? These are not real people.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I mean, to a certain extent that happens in theater, it maybe a little bit less so. You know, all of those really male playwrights who write women purely based on their sexual
availability.
Where I think there was one play, I think, I forget what the name is, but the one character is only there to be used for sex. No, it's a Pinter play. It's a Pinter play. And you're just like, who? This is really frustrating, you know, because I can't. You know, as a woman, it's just like, I'm
the garbage roll.
It's a garbage roll because you're like, well, I can suss out something from this. And he's a very good playwright. Don't get me wrong. Pinter's one of the most incredible playwrights ever. But it's still just like, you've written great men, but you've kind of left out the women. You've left, there's a blind spot.
Yeah. And a whole part of this world you're creating, which could form it and like create it even more.
Yeah, but they just don't even think about it.
Like, oh, so, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, you're like, wait, what?
What do you mean? She's fine. She's pretty.
Yeah, she's pretty.
Oh, okay. Like,
oh, okay.
I'll just be pretty. Effortlessly.
Effortlessly pretty.
Just so my boobs.
I just Google. That's the only effortless thing about me. Exactly. Is my boobs. They're just there. Boobs. There's no effort.
Hoisted, I guess.
A lot of effort.
They're hoisted.
They are a lot of effort.
So yeah, I just Googled like, this article is like how 50 famous female characters were described in their screenplays.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not going to read all of them, but like there's one here for Sarah Connor, which is interesting because people are like, oh, Sarah Connor's a badass, you know?
Yeah.
She's like one of the heroes of film. Right.
It's like, this is the way James Cameron described Sarah Connor over the arc of two Terminator movies. So Terminator 1, it's Sarah Connor, is 19, small and delicate featured, pretty in a flawed, accessible way. She doesn't stop the party when she walks in, but you'd like to get to know her. Her what vulnerable quality masks
she doesn't
a
stop
strength,
a party.
Masks a strength even she doesn't know exists.
It's like she doesn't stop a party. It's like the girl that walks in who's wearing glasses.
I know.
And then takes, and then out her
takes
ponytail.
Them off and you're like, oh, hey, girl.
She's
takes the bun out.
Like, yeah. She's like, oh. What's that fucking movie with Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Yeah. She's all that.
She takes her overalls off.
Where she takes her overalls off and puts her hair down. You're like, she looks the same.
Rachel Lee Cook.
She looks the same.
No, she's her. So cute when she's wearing her like paint overalls and stuff.
Yeah,
and, like,
adorable.
That outfit is so darn
sparkling.
So here's the description of Sarah Connor from Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Sarah Connor is not the same woman we remember from last time. Her eyes peer out through a wild tangle of hair like those of a cornered animal. Defiant and intense, but skittering around looking for escape at the same time.
Skittering?
She's like schizophrenic.
Down one cheek is a long scar. Her voice is low and chilling and monotone. I mean, that at least kind of makes her sound like a badass, but...
Yeah, but still, like...
But a sexy badass.
Like, as an actor...
It's still a sexual object. It's, like, it's just, instead of, like, the pretty girl, she's the badass girl.
I know. Well, and, like, as an actor, so, like, I'm reading that description, and I'm like, okay, I'm playing Sarah Connor. How do I even do that?
You know what? Work. How to do your hair for the audition is all.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
that's
all.
And you know,
a lot of bangs.
A wild haircut.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I found this wig in the garbage. It's perfect. I still don't know how to deliver my lines, though.
Right.
You could really help me out there.
So it's fascinating. It is really, really fascinating at how casting directors tend to surprisingly not have a lot of imagination. And so when you don't put like physical descriptions, they're kind of like, well, what is this? What I don't understand. And it's like, cast anyone, like anyone who could do a very good job, you know. But
they're like doing it for the men. So the skill set's there. That's the thing that's stupid. If you went into an audition and the men were like, I got no feedback or no direction either. You'd be like, okay. So they just don't know how to describe the character, but since it's happening so clearly for the men, you're like, okay, guys, get a woman on your team, have them write the lady parts,
have them well, just like talk to women, like have a conversation, just be like, does this sound right to your wife, to your sister, hey, does this sound right? No, actually, it doesn't sound like a human being. Okay,
just
okay.
Bangs.
Go back to the drawing board. She's just wild hair right
just
now.
Just boobs and bangs.
She's just boobs and bangs. But I think the conversation is changing a little bit. The optimistic part of me hopes that it is changing. So that's kind of exciting. And we can see that there are people who are like, we've got to change this conversation.
And like, give them a chance. Because, like, it's not that there are more women writers. There's always been women writers. It's that you're giving them a chance to be publicly viewed, right?
Totally. Well, because what has ended up happening is there's, like, this really strange feedback loop that happens where there's male playwrights. They write roles for men. Then they were like, I need a male director. And then the male director goes on to the education system. And they stack the cards. So it's all just being produced by men. Mm-hmm. And there's really not any like way for a woman to get in there. Men support men. Just, you know, like we all kind of do, we support like. And so men support men. It's like this feedback loop of male support. And then there's no like cross. There's no way to be able to get the women in there and their voices in there. And so what I hope is happening, and I think I can see it, there's like little glimmers of it where women are starting to support women. Women directors are getting that opportunity. Mm-hmm. The plays are written about women. It's not just men who are taking the leads and all of that kind of stuff. So that's the hope, right? That like we can, I mean, men can still support men, of course, but women also have the ability to have that same type of feedback loop.
Well, and that's interesting what you said, like, you know, they work in the field and then they end up in education.
Yeah.
And are educating the new generation of the same mm-hmm. thing they did.
Yes.
And that's, I never realized that before.
Yeah.
That's interesting to think about.
And it's these blind spots. They just don't even see it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really occur to them that there's like, oh, well, I'm going to support this male student because he reminds me of me. And that's a totally fine and wonderful thing to say, mm-hmm. but you're also still, you've got this blind spot for, you know, a female actress who's like also in just the same amount of talented and can, and actually is probably working twice as hard because she doesn't have as many roles, you know, so she has to fight harder for the roles that do exist and all of that kind of stuff. So
your experience with plays where there are really like deep, complicated female characters like Shakespeare. I feel like he actually has a pretty good like track record with that. So like Beatrice, for example, or even if you look at like Macbeth and Lady Macbeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you feel? I don't know. I don't know like what roles you've played, but like if you're in that situation where you're doing Much Ado and you have a really strong male character in Benedict, and then you have a really strong female character in Beatrice, and like depending on who the director is, like do they give more deference to like one character? And like developing that character in the play and their skill or highlighting them more than the like female character?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it just depends on the director and who they are. So I actually did play Lady Macbeth last summer at a small regional theater company in Indiana. And my director was a woman. And so both of the characters got their due. The guy who was playing Macbeth, he had a few limitations in his skill set. So she spent a little bit more time with him than with me because I was kind of like on my stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. With Beatrice and Benedict, it's just interesting because, yes, Shakespeare wrote great female characters, but he was also still, they were men actors. And so, like, Benedict still has the last word. You know, like she stops talking once they get engaged. And so it's just kind of like, oh.
Well, I mean, I definitely have stopped sharing my opinion. Ben and I have had nuptials. He hears nothing from me.
I was going to say, and I'm not saying that, like, oh my God, Shakespeare was like the most woke person. I mean, he literally has a play called The Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah.
And then,
Extremely problematic in almost every single one of his plays.
But I still feel like there are like pretty cool female characters.
There are.
But also, like, you do forget that back then, like, it wasn't women acting, it was like boys and like young men who were playing the female parts.
Yeah. Yeah. He was writing for specific actors too, like the actors who he was writing with. He had he knew who he was writing for. And so that just is another thing. He's been supporting men. They know who they're writing for.
Right. And the same people breaking mm-hmm. into that, yeah. you know, you're like, hey, no, I'm pretty cool. I'm from the, you know, mm-hmm. next door. Pretty
they're,
great.
They're like, no, we've got somebody already playing this part. Yeah. So it's really, but don't get me wrong. Like Lady Macbeth is one of the best characters out there because she leads the choices. You know,
running
she is
the one.
She's
show.
Running the entire show. Until she has created a monster. And then right. she's like, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
whoops, you know. And then she, you know, has all of this
breakdown.
Guilt. She has all of this. She has a mental breakdown and everything like that. But even then, you know, she is still pretty rad in her mental breakdown because she's just reliving. She just can't sleep. And so she's sleepwalking, reliving all of that. The choices that she made, because that's what happens with us is we read.
What we do.
That's
every
what we do.
Night. I can't sleep,
Insomnia.
So I'm going to think about all the things I've ever said out loud that I really shouldn't have.
That I wish I had
to live the same night.
I'm just going to go down a really dark guilt spiral yes. for the next 4 hours.
Remember that
every
guy from 15 years ago?
Night.
Here's all the details.
Yeah. So she's a pretty awesome character, and I would venture to say she's one of the best female characters that Shakespeare wrote, for
yeah.
sure, for sure.
So in all of your acting experiences, I want to hear some of the craziest shit you've had to deal with, like being a woman in
yeah.
the field.
Right.
Specific things. Like I've got some just from high school and college theater,
yeah.
which meant nothing, you know, or community theater.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what do you see most?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was just going to say, I have a lot of experience from, like, the industry side, and I've seen, like, how sexism manifests itself mm-hmm. in the film industry, but even from that perspective, I see how hard it is for actors to break in, and I'm just like, anytime, like, I was in a casting or part of a casting or saw casting, I was like, oh my God, those poor people.
Yeah.
That looks like a nightmare.
They're being ripped to pieces.
Yes.
And now, if you don't have 10,000 people,
holy 10, shit, like, your self-esteem has to be rock solid to, like, be able to handle that level of rejection.
Well, it's this really weird like paradigm where you have to be vulnerable to be an actor. You have to be emotionally available to tap into roles, you know, that call for that. But you also have to have the thickest skin possible.
I'm the opposite of that.
So it's like
the thinnest skin that ever existed.
And it's just like, how do I even do this? And the thing is I just don't know how. Like it's really, really weird. Okay. To answer your question, Melissa,
yeah.
actually, a lot of the weird stuff that has been said to me has come from professors and come from male professors.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, okay, a couple male professors and one female professor. So, like, I had one male professor who said to me, he's like, you're going to be really great when you tap into your sexuality.
Ew, fuck off.
No.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh.
And just as, like, a 19-year-old girl.
Stop it.
I'm like,
he's like,
what?
Tap into this dick is what he's saying.
Kind of.
Like, no.
You're like, what do you even mean? What are you even talking about? That is so, so, what? You know, it's
yeah.
just like, what are you
Did
even talking
Did he mean, like,
about?
When you, like, grow up a little more? Because, like, at 19, I'm definitely still, like, little girl.
Well, I think it, like, to me, that kind of, it kind of speaks to the whole thing of, like, women characters and that, like,
yeah.
there's two kinds, right? There's, like, the, like, vixen and the siren and, like, the hot, sexy, like, love interest character. And then there's, like,
yeah. the, like, ingenue and the best friend.
Yes.
And
or, like,
once
the mom.
Play the
or,
mom
like, the
and the
motherly
best
characters.
Forever, they're, like, well, if you could tap into the sexuality, you could yeah. really play the ingenues.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And, like, and that the thing is that the ingenues, like, are the ones that have the most, like, screen time / lines. And so you're, like, yeah, but if I'm not really that interested in those parts, then you get cast as, like you said, the best friend. Or, like, the mom. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the quirky aunt. Or, like, some shit. And it's, like, listen. Yeah. Women are not, like, just this thing or this thing.
Yeah,
there's,
true.
Like, this whole spectrum.
Right? Yeah. And so that is a really confusing thing to say and just an entirely inappropriate thing to say.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, female professors who ever crossed that line and built, like, supported that stereotype? Because mm-hmm. when I was in college, I had a female professor that would say that stuff all the time.
Really? Lady to lady?
Uh-huh. The oh. woman. And she, and I think she, you know, it's hard because you're working in an industry that looks at your looks.
Yeah.
So you have to be aware that like what your body type is and what you look like is important.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. if someone's looking for a skinny blonde, you have to be a skinny blonde if you want that role, right? Like you can't be angry about it. You just,
yeah.
if that's what you want,
it's very,
be it, right?
Yeah. It's very rare for you to change a person's mind once they have that in their head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I had like a female professor say, at one time for a film audition, if I could bounce a little bit in the commercial we were filming.
What does that mean?
To look perkier.
Bounce your little boobies
like
around?
Yes, titties? It was my boobs.
Titties.
Yeah. It would just like show a little bit better for the film test. And I was like, cool, cool. Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
You're like, no. good day.
I'm going to go strap them down a little bit more.
And be take two. Really still.
You know, like, yeah. but it came back from...
Yeah.
You know, generational almost.
Yeah. So I have had a professor who, well, I've actually had a couple of female professors who have been just a little off, you know, in the way that they handled their female students. I had one professor who, this is kind of a long backstory, but in my grad program, you have to do a thesis role to graduate. It's part of it. But the school, in their picking of the plays, the lineup, they did not pick plays that were good for women. Like, they didn't pick female thesis roles that were...
So you're great. So none of us are graduating?
So none of us... Like, there were two women in my cohort, me and my dear, dear friend, and then two men. So there was only four of us. But the men got thesis roles, but the women didn't. And the two plays that they picked were Pride and Prejudice and Romeo and Juliet. And I am like, okay, these are my choices. This is what I've got to work with. All right.
Dumb ladies.
Elizabeth Bennet,
but it's not bad. Yeah.
Elizabeth Bennet, but it depends on the script, if the script is good. And like Juliet, which is a great part. But it's
she's
like,
14.
She's 14.
People forget that shit.
And
14-year-olds dumb.
But it's love.
But it's love.
No, it's not. Go home.
So my professor who was directing, she was directing Romeo and Juliet. And for my thesis, I put down Juliet wanting that because I was like, well, I've done a lot of Shakespeare. I might as well try. She wouldn't give me the part. Like, she flat refused to give me the part of Juliet. And my cohort, who put his name in for Romeo, got it. And he looked exactly like me, same age, same, like, we looked the same, essentially. Uh-huh. But she wouldn't give me the part, and she said it was because I looked too old. But he was fine. It was totally fine for him to play Romeo, even though we literally looked the same age.
For a 40-year-old to date a 10-year-old.
So, right. But like, what about the other woman in your program, though? Like, so did she get Juliet, or was she in the other play?
She was Elizabeth. She got Elizabeth. And I ended up playing Jane as my thesis role, which is not.
Hopefully all you out there know the story of Pride and Prejudice
to know to Elizabeth's sister.
It's not a thesis role, everyone.
No.
It's not a thesis role.
It's a supporting role.
Yeah. And she flatly refused, like, and it was very interesting because her sexism came out in a way where she just couldn't see the double standard. Like, she just couldn't see the fact that it was okay for my male cohort to play that part, even though he was the same age as me and looked the same age as me, but she wouldn't give me the part of Juliet.
So just who got that, like some undergrad person?
Yeah.
That's bullshit. Mm-hmm.
But it's okay because the production turned out to be really bad. And so I was like, bullet dodged, you know. Yeah. But she was a funny one because she, you know, she's – that professor was everything, you know, you'd think progressively that she would not be sexist. But she was, and she was a lesbian woman, had been working in the theater for a really long time. But generationally, they just don't see that, like, there's sexism that's so pervasive that it's just, like, you're literally not seeing this double standard.
Well, right? And do you think, like, it's not only that, but they're looking at who's coming to see the play.
Yeah.
Like, you're especially in education, you're going in and they're trying to set you up for the real world, not for the world we hope exists. We hope that someone wants to see a Romeo and Juliet equal of age, right? Mm-hmm. And they're saying, no, they don't. They want a little Juliet who looks young, frail.
I don't want to see a little Juliet. That creeps me out.
I know, but I'm saying
older Romeo. That's sure. fucking weird.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, he wasn't in his 40s. Was
I mean,
he?
We were like, both in our late 20s at the time.
Yeah, or like they're preparing you to understand that in the real world, your body type counts very importantly. And then you get out there and you push against that real world, but the truth is it exists.
I can.
And we're hoping that that changes. Yeah. But that, I mean, like, that's what I wonder is half of it generationally and half of it is, no, this is how the business works, like the current business.
Right. It's like, know? It's type. So you were saying earlier, like, people don't want to see, like, plus size women or, like, fat bodies in, like, certain roles. So, like, if you're coming to an audition and you're not, like, a thin, pretty blonde, they're going to look at you and be like, okay, so in the example of Romeo and Juliet, oh, you can play the nurse, mm-hmm, right? Yeah. Like, you can't be Juliet, though, because Juliet has to look has to look a certain way.
Which both are great parts. Just not.
But, like, you're always, like, you're typecast, essentially. Like, you can't be a romantic lead if you look. That's, like, the assumption of Hollywood and casting and anything. Like, if you look a certain way, you can't be a romantic lead.
Yeah. I think the thing is there's this balance of education as well as, like, the real world, preparing you for the real world.
Like, giving the opportunities to learn and prepare.
Yeah, because the thing is that, like, it's more valuable for a student to say, well, you're going to take on a bulk role. Like, you're going to have to take on a role that has the majority of the lines, that holds the play up, mm-hmm, is more important than what a person looks like in that scenario, particularly because it's a thesis. You know what I mean? And when I got out of school, the roles that I was cast in, I surprisingly were the younger roles. So it was actually flipped. I was told in grad school that I was going to be cast as older, but it was actually the complete opposite. And so it's like, well, you can make an assumption, mm-hmm, that is false. You know, you have to kind of be able to gauge what is best for this student.
Right.
What is best for this, because that's the ultimate goal. What is best for this student. Right. And that's why it's so frustrating, because then you have professors who just don't like women. They just don't like women. They don't like talking to women.
Jeez.
They don't like giving direction to women. They just don't like it. And they connect better to men.
It's crazy.
And it's just like, what are you talking about? What?
It's like half of the world.
Yeah, I know. 50% of the people you have to interact with are women.
I would prefer not to talk to you.
I just don't know how to talk to you. When it's like, talk to me like a human fucking being, you know?
Yeah. So it's like one thing when you're like, I don't like people, so I'm not leaving my house. But right. If you're directing a group of them and you're like, if you could just handle half of them, that'd be great. Because I don't want to talk to them.
I'm just curious how that's progressed, like, past your college career and, like, into your professional career.
Into the professional career, I have actually tried to make it more of a goal to, like, be in plays and productions that focus on other types of stories being told that are not necessarily, like, what has been told all the time. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky to be in new work, plays that were just barely being developed and, you know, new playwrights getting their work out there. And so that has been really, really wonderful. I was cast in a production and it centers around, like, four men. But what was fascinating is that this culture surrounded in the cast. So, like, the play informed the culture of the cast. So, yes, it does. Yeah, it absolutely does. And so the four leads were these very strong, very manly straight men, you know, very, very manly straight men.
Right.
And so the culture of the rehearsal, the culture of the cast turned a bit into a frat thing. like this weird kind of frat mentality, like, you know, they would tell Joe, you know, it's just male. It was just very male.
I'm going to
locker room talk.
I'm going to say what everyone's thinking, which is there are straight guys in theater productions.
Actually, yes.
Millions.
Millions.
Sorry, just had to get that bad joke out of the way.
I mean, I was thinking that too.
And these guys, what ended up happening is there was more men than women already in the cast, but the women's roles were significantly smaller and significantly more. It was like ingenues, you know. I played many different parts in that, and I was like a wench and, you know, a ball.
A cooking wench.
A cleaning wench. And I had different wigs, and it was just like,
I need to use wench in my everyday life more.
There's, you guys, there's a whole spectrum, a whole beautiful spectrum of wenches you can play.
There's a whole,
clearly.
Talk to me about it.
Yeah.
But the culture of the cast turned into where the girls did this funny thing where they became like simpering to the men, where it was like this, it was like fraternity, sorority, kind of giggling at the men's jokes. The men do all of the talking and the women laugh. And so it was like an interesting experience because it was in the outside world. Like it was not in college. It was not in any sort of educational experience. And there was this culture that happened where it was very male. And the women became, I don't want to say subservient because that's not necessarily what happened, but it was a strange culture.
Well, I think that that happens, like I've seen that happen in a few different productions that I've been a part of where the people who play the leads, there is a weird hierarchy there, even if it's like
classism,
even if it's community theater, like people are like, oh, that's so-and-so. He is playing Jean Valjean in our community production of Les Mis. He's a big deal. And so I could see how like every single lead being male in a male dominated production like that, like could create that culture.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I was never good in high school. And so I was not good in that cast. I was like, I don't fit in here. It was very strange.
Mm. When you're talking about like the culture of the been in some plays where like being backstage, like men are pulling out their junk in front of us and, you know, they're like, it's a play. Everything that happens backstage is also magic and not really happening, you know. Like,
ugh, yikes,
none of this matters.
There's Why? Well, that gets into the whole like Me Too movement, right? Where like there's like weird blurred lines in show business where people are like, oh, this is okay because like we're both comedians and like I can show you my dick and it's funny, right?
Whipping out dicks, I just don't understand how that, unless it's like a dick whipping show.
No, I was like on stage and I looked off stage and a man had pulled out his penis.
I mean,
and
that's
I
was thinking, actually kind of
as like
funny,
a joke,
to
just
honest,
to be,
just
you,
to
like,
break me.
Just to try to break you.
That man was in his 50s.
Oh,
and I was
sick.
Not 21.
Hard
so
no.
So this is.
Yeah.
And there are children around.
Oh. I mean,
so,
can they see
I mean,
the penis?
I don't think the kid saw the penis.
Oh, that's what I was asking.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because he was in the wings and you were on stage.
So no
right?
children and penis face to face.
But I was, you know, like.
I mean, there's even a part of me that thinks it's a little funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he did it.
Yeah, because he thought it was funny. Well, it's just that same thing, that conversation where you can talk about like, oh, you know, Jared Leto is the Joker sending used condoms to his castmates and like a fetal pig. That's what the Joker would do because he's a method actor, you know. But the thing is that it's like, no, that's just you being
a
huge jerk to your castmates
right.
and creating a very toxic environment where no one actually wants to be around you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did that happen?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of power dynamics in like productions, whether it's for film or for stage.
Right.
And you have a lot of like, there are oftentimes like men who are kind of in like pseudo positions of power over women. And like you were saying with all those women who were, you know, in the cast with like the Musketeers where it's like, oh, I have to, even though this offends me, like I have to laugh and pretend like it doesn't because I don't want to be like,
I don't want to be difficult, or I don't want to be like perceived as a bitch. I don't want to cause problems in the play. Mm-hmm. Like, I got this role.
Ruin the community feeling of your show.
Yeah.
We're all friends here, except for Mara. She's the worst.
Yeah.
Why isn't Mara talking
Mara
to us?
Mara gets so mad when you show her your dick.
Definitely don't do it.
She's totally not chill. Don't show her your dick, anybody.
Don't keep your balls to yourself, everyone.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating thing. And there is a double standard because, like, well, one, women just don't naturally do that. We're not going to pull our dicks out to people.
Right.
You know? But
I do it all the time.
What is this?
I wish I had something to whip out. You know?
I'm not going to, like, I'm not just going to flash somebody on stage.
Mm-hmm. I would.
I think there are women that would.
But there are women that would. Yeah. But the thing is that's interesting is, like, I know I don't have any way of proving this.
Right.
But I do believe that if a woman had acted the same way that Jared Leto had, regardless of her standing as an actor and, like, how famous she was.
Or that she was being method or she was getting into
character. She was being method. Yeah. She was getting into character. I highly doubt that it would have just been excused the way that Jared Leto.
Everybody would have been like, she done lost her mind.
She's lost her mind. She's crazy. She's
a lady doing it, or Jared Leto.
Right. Like, anybody.
Fuck, how did I miss that story?
Yeah. Because it's just insane. And so there is kind of this double standard where women have to work twice as hard to get what men get.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's true of a lot of things.
It's just true to look
in
STEM.
Just to
it's
look
true
normal.
In the arts. It's true in, like, theater and acting. Mm-hmm. It's true in STEM careers. It's true in business.
Yeah.
Like, it's true in, like, the medical field. I mean, it's like, like, minorities, women, people of color have to work twice as hard as a white man to get where they can
get. Like, in my experience, you go into an audition and let's say there's four women parts and eight men parts or 10 men parts. They'll always be scraping for men. They will always be scraping the barrel for a guy.
Right.
And they will have 30 women show up for four parts.
Wow.
And so the women literally have to fight for those parts. And then the men are like, oh, well, we don't have enough guys. Do you know any guys? Do you know any guys?
You're like, I could play this part.
Do you know any guys? And it's like, no, we don't. Okay. Well, we go on Facebook, try to find a guy. Yeah. And that's literally what happens. And so,
like, if you round up a man, then you can have a part.
No, if you round up a man, then the man gets the part.
You're still out of a part.
And they're just like,
and you're still
thanks,
out of
that
a
was
part.
Really helpful. Bye. Good luck on really, your next audition.
That was really helpful. Sorry we couldn't cast you in this one. There was not enough parts for women.
And I think the interesting thing that's, yes, this happens, the dynamic, the women fighting harder in every single industry. But the thing about film or arts in general is the excuses one gives for poor behavior.
Yeah.
So all of this happens and they're like, well, it's the role, you know, and then it's like, well, it's the play or like, you know, it's fine.
It's not me. I'm not sexist. It's the way the play was written.
Yeah.
Does that create an unhealthy sense of competition?
Yes.
With actresses? And like, how do you experience that?
It has. And I very early in my education, very early, I realized I made a very specific choice to support any woman because it really bothered me.
It's so easy to hate the other women.
It's so easy to hate the other women. And it's so frustrating when you hear another woman say to you, oh, well, our professor only likes you because you lost weight. Mm-hmm. Or our professor only likes you because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their insecurity. It's their problem, but it still has an impact on you.
It does.
And we're trying to support each other.
We're trying to support each other.
Healthy. And then we've got like, couples of my best friends in college are now like almost mortal enemies. They haven't spoken in decades because one got a role the other person was up for. And it's the stupidest thing.
It's truly, it's so dumb. And there's two schools of thought. If I want to succeed, I've got to join in. I've got to do that. And then there's the other school of thought that's, I'm never going to act that way. And so I try very, very hard to go, I don't care if you get the part over me. I want to do good work, and I want you to do your best work too.
Right.
And if that can keep, but it does foster a very, very unhealthy environment, competitive environment between women. And it's all about looks. It's all about, you know, who you know and, you know, who you're dating and everything like that. It's really bad.
Yeah. Was there ever any gossip about like, oh, well, she got the part because she was like totally sleeping with the director or the professor, or she did this thing and or like the professor
that was
like,
my first thought
wants to do her, and so
handies.
That's
exactly. So many handies.
Those HJs. HJs.
I mean, there's always a huge history of the casting couch, you know, like all of that, but more so what my experience kind of near to that was, I had an experience in my first year of grad school where my professor who taught us, I guess could quote unquote, could be the method acting or Meisner. It's a specific type of acting. It's very reliant on emotion and everything like that. But he said something inappropriate to my cohort, my female cohort, when we were in class. And he said it in class. Ugh. I didn't catch it because it was so like... he slid it in there, you know, it was really quiet, but she caught it and she told me about it. And I was like, wait, are you sure? Like, I honestly didn't hear it. And she went to the school and complained and got him fired. Still a tenured professor. He still got his pension. So he really wasn't punished, but she pulled herself out of class before he left. When I was in class, it was just me and four other men in class. He said some inappropriate things to me too. And I was like, oh, this is what this is. I am in a class with four men. He says something inappropriate about my breasts. They all laugh and we move on.
Oh, what the fuck?
And it doesn't matter. And for me,
what are you gonna do?
My initial response is to laugh too.
Of course.
Because it's like I'm
you're in a room with fucking five men.
Fight or flight. Yeah, you're like, I don't know what to do.
It's what I did in high school. It's what I did in college. Mm-hmm. I laughed with the boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to be able to hang. You want to be able to roll. You want to be able to be.
You just realize that they're laughing at your body. And there's really no way that you're going to get out of this situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, you're going to be like the hurt and the thing is, doe that walks away.
And the thing is that I love and trust my friends who are not my professor. And it's shocking for these men that I truly, truly love and that are some of the best, you know, salt of the earth men laugh.
Yeah. And what we're doing right now is just asking the men to just not laugh. Just not laugh. Like the bare minimum of what we need you to do in this women's movement to not be trivialized for our bodies.
Don't participate.
Is just non-participation.
Yeah.
We're not asking you to fight the fight because we have it. We just want you to stop.
Right. Just don't participate.
To it. Right.
And I understand that moment because I had that moment too where I was like, oh, do I just laugh?
You were part of it too. Yeah.
But the hard thing is that he was already on probation. That's what the hard thing reason. Is that like
once they're in trouble, they can do whatever they want.
Once they're in trouble, they're like, fuck it. I'm just going to say whatever I want.
Tits.
And then it's like, well, you know, you're being abusive. No, you're actually just being abusive.
Yeah.
And he's not getting punished
for that.
Yeah. Because tenure, I mean, we can talk about tenure, but that's probably boring for the listeners. It leads to
it's problematic.
Mm-hmm. It's problematic. It leads to
like no one should be protected from bad behavior.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It is an interesting environment to be in. And to be perfectly frank, like there's this sunk cost fallacy that I'm dealing with right now. I've been doing this for probably about 15 years, pretty much straight. And I am to a point in my career where I go, does this make me happy? Does this actually really make me happy?
Oh, girl, I feel you.
Yeah. And so now I'm like, okay, well, I just sunk pretty much my entire life into this. So how do I still retain the good stuff? How do I change and mold myself so that I don't end up like becoming jaded and abusive, because that's how the abuse cycle is, that these people get angry and they're abused themselves, and then they become these right. abusers. They become what they hate.
Right.
And so it's like, well,
like subconsciously, because you're just floating it on to the next generation.
Entirely subconsciously, where, you know, you hear professors were like, no, we have to tear them down emotionally. We have to, because that's what happened to me, and I am a good actor. Yeah. And it's like, well, no, actually, you don't. You don't have to play mind games.
Yeah.
You teach them a technique, and if they're good, they'll do it.
That same thought process and exists, like, even on the non-acting side of, like, the film mm-hmm. industry, where it's like people perpetuate abuse because they're like, well, I had to, like, work my way up. I had to be a production assistant for 2 years before I was able to, like, rise the ranks and become what I am today. And, you know, there's not as much there aren't as many women working in that industry. And the women who are in that industry kind of end up, like you said, being that, like, sort of gnarled old woman who's, like, smoking a cigarette. It's like, well, that's just show business, baby, you know? And, like, like perpetuating that
Joey
idea.
Joey Tribbiani's agent.
Exactly.
Estelle.
Yeah.
But, like, what you were talking about with the sunk cost fallacy, like, I went through a similar thing where I was an editor and a producer for, like, years, and I was just wildly unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I got to a point where I'm like, wait, like, why did I get into this? Yeah. And why am I still doing it? And it's because I've been doing it for 10 years. And do I want to keep doing it? And can mm-hmm. I change my career? And so, like, I actually last year did a really pretty intense, like, career change where I'm not really doing at all. I mean, I'm using a lot of my same skill set, but the job is very different. Mm-hmm. But I'm working at a company that is very inclusive. Mm-hmm. And my whole leadership team is women. Mm-hmm. And so many people in my company are in positions, leadership positions, and they're women. And it's like just night and day difference. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm. Yeah. Because I just realized, I was like, the toxic environment, the competitive, you know, this is not really making me a happy human being. And and I'm tired of saying that, you know, I got good at being able to say my worth isn't contingent on this stranger. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, it's just like, okay, if I want to do what I said I wanted to do when I was 15 years old, which was to help people, how do I use my skills to actually help?
Right.
Because it doesn't – because just being an actor, you know, you get sucked into that horrible business where right. it's all about the way that you look. It's how you present yourself. It's your 10,000 followers on Instagram. And at a certain point, it's like – it's like, this doesn't mean shit. This doesn't mean shit. Like, am I actually helping somebody? So in my grand journey.
No midlife crisis here.
Midlife crisis. In my midlife crisis, I think I've decided to use devised theater, which is the type of theater where you come together as a group and build an ensemble and a play, to use devised theater as a therapeutic practice. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, to try to – and I like the idea of using it with couples. So, like, with couples and, like, adding adventure and a fun and play into a couple who may be bored or who may, like, be struggling to communicate, because device theater will immediately tell you how to communicate.
What are you doing currently that you feel like is making – is, like, leading you in that direction of helping people?
Or
what
are your – that's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, currently, like, there's stuff that I'm working on. I actually think the education system that we have in the United States is pretty messed up.
Oh, really?
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
That's a new opinion.
You don't say. So I have some ideas about how I can create online courses that will not be as expensive, still getting the same technique, still getting all of that information that they need to be a good actor, but at like less than half the price of what they would pay for college.
Cool.
And then I also have reached out to a couple of places, rehab centers and Volunteers for America, to go in and do improv with the people who are detoxing or who are in rehab.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That sounds way cool.
Well, thank you, Mara, for joining us. This has been like a really awesome conversation.
Super fun.
It has been really great.
Power on. Thanks for supporting and keep that going.
Yeah. Support theater. And
do it.
Yeah.
And women in the arts.
Women in the arts. Support each other. I think that's a good a good thing to do.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Say yes to each other. Yes and them, as as an improver would say.
Yeah. We're just going to say yes and to life.
It's our family rule.
So I just have a quick follow-up. We got this email from a listener, Jordan, who we've heard from before. This is a response to our second period episode where we were talking about things getting stuck in vaginas.
Mm-hmm. That was a great episode, by the way.
It is art.
Thank you. Thank you. Jordan says, "Hello, gals. Sorry if this comment is too late to be relevant." Never. It's never too late to be relevant. "Every once in a while, I have patients come in who need help removing foreign bodies that have been stuck in their lady parts."
I'm not, like,
that makes
right
me
now,
so queasy.
I can feel my uterus cramping.
Yeah, there's a clutch. Yeah. Yeah.
He said, "Usually they are retained tampons," which, like, I seriously thought that was an urban legend. So, like, but I think
they can,
like,
get you lodged. Guys,
yeah. Well, it happened to one of my friends in high school. She put a tampon in, and then a few days later, she put in another one, yeah, forgetting, and she got really sick. Like, she like was throwing up. She was, like, whoa, really pale. Like, she was really sick from
so
the
it
second
was, like,
tampon
in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then didn't know about it.
Well, she had just forgotten that there wasn't one in there, and
I've
so
gone
she put
to
a
go
second
put
one.
Another one up and be like, "Gotta take it out," but I've never, like, had
left
to go
one
fishing
in.
Yeah, she accidentally left one in and then put in another one.
Yeah.
So it got jammed up there even more.
Crazy.
And everything.
Nothing should be jammed.
Yeah. So usually, he says, usually they are retained tampons, which sounds like what that is. And yep, once an incorrectly sized diva cup. What is that?
Ooh.
What?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
a large?
No, you guys, I
no,
use a diva
a
cup.
Small, just
she's an expert on
away.
Cups.
Oh. I'm an expert on cups.
Okay, we need to have you back on.
I've been
to talk about the cups.
Yeah,
cups.
I've been using. I have to. Okay, I will just share this. I have been using a diva cup for probably about 6 years.
Yeah, see, what?
Whoa,
what?
That's
yeah,
a long
I didn't even
time.
Know
I think that
invented.
Was even before I even was aware diva cups were a thing.
Oh, yeah. And it's legitimately changed my life.
She is the mm-hmm. diva.
Yes.
Well, I've actually turned a lot of people on to them.
Yeah.
So we will talk about divas because I okay. I know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll do mm-hmm. we'll do a diva follow-up. He said the most interesting one was the top half of a plastic tampon applicator that was jammed crossways,
yep, that's
crossways
at the
Cheryl
end
style.
At the end of a patient's vagina.
No.
I had to use forceps to remove it,
no,
and it was quite difficult. And he said, "I'm always careful to maintain normal chit chat so I don't embarrass them too much. Anyway, keep up the good work, Jordan."
So the weather. Let me snatch that out.
How do you, like, chit chat your way to, like, like, painfully removing? Ah, oh, that's just.
I don't even know.
Jordan, you are doing the Lord's work, sir.
I think I did mention on the podcast that the first time I used a tampon, like, I left the first part.
But how does it go sideways? How does it get
so maybe just like shift?
I don't know. Yeah.
It like something
as
happened.
A teenager, you're just like shoving and plunging.
Well,
maybe some good sex after a tampon.
Oh, maybe, I don't know. Like, yeah. It's like Tetris, but the opposite direction.
Well, I've got a story about an IUD. Not mine, but I'll tell you guys about an IUD.
Okay.
On the birth control.
Okay.
Is that your birth control?
No. Oh,
that's
no,
mine.
It's everyone in our friend group except me.
So we also have a mansplaining moment that I'm going to read.
Mansplaining moment.
So, yeah, we've come to that part of the podcast. Where's our jingle? We don't have a jingle.
Jazzy.
Sorry, everybody. So we had a listener write in. They said they prefer to remain anonymous. So they said, recently a small subsection of the marketing team invited a communications coach in to give a short seminar on communications in a high-growth environment. As it was the marketing team, the room was 90% women. Cool. Mm-hmm. 90% women. We love that.
Yeah.
But then she says, my male manager already has a reputation of abrasive communication, so I was curious to see how he would adapt. Although the entire session was humorous, the key moment was when the coach asked the room to go around and say what we hoped to gain from the session. Most of the participants said things about clarity with brevity, skills for speaking with different levels across the org, etc. When it gets to my manager, he announces to the room that his goal is to become better at convincing people about his side when he knows he's right.
Oh my God.
Did the women just laugh?
She was said, it like, then it's like, room?
Every man's dream.
Then oh my gosh.
Then there's like four like laugh emojis. And then it says, what the fuck? Collaboration? Question mark.
If that wasn't enough, later in the session, when women in the room would ask the coach questions, my manager would unprompted jump in and provide his own insights and feedback based on his own experience. Eye roll emoji.
Oh, thanks.
Needless to say, when we did this mini exercise where we had to uncover whether you prefer speaking or listening, he was squarely in the speaking camp. Yeah, that's fucking nonsense. So thank you to that listener for sending in that mansplaining moment. That's horrifying and beautiful and hilarious and terrible all at the same time.
At the same time.
We're loving our mansplaining moments, so please keep them coming in. Yes. We're excited to read more of them, as we have a bunch that are in tow.
Yeah.
And if you have any more questions that you want to send, topics that you want us to talk about, you know where to find us.
Yeah. Look in the show notes. You can see our email and our phone number, and send us stuff. Okay. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Bye.